The Wondersmith by Fitz James O'Brien. Part 4. The Mannequins and the Minas. The four gypsies left Herr Hippa's house cautiously and directed their steps toward Mr. Pipple's bird shop. Galosh Street was asleep. Nothing was stirring in that tenebrous slum save a dog that savagely gnawed a bone which lay on a dust heap, tantalizing him with the flavor of food without its substance. As the gypsies moved stealthily along in the darkness, they had a sinister and murderous air that would not have failed to attract the attention of the policeman of the quarter, if that worthy had not at the moment been comfortably ensconced in the neighboring Rainbow Barroom, listening to the improvisations of that talented vocalist, Mr. Harrison, who was making impromptu verses on every possible subject, to the accompaniment of a cithern, which was played by a sad little Italian in a large cloak, to whom the host of the Rainbow gave so many toddies and a dollar for his nightly performance. Mr. Pipple's shop was but a short distance from the Wondersmith's house. A few moments, therefore, brought the gypsy party to the door, when, by aid of a key which Herr Hippa produced, they silently slipped into the entry. Here the Wondersmith took a dark lantern from under his cloak, removed the cap that shrouded the light, and led the way into the shop, which was separated from the entry only by a glass door that yielded, like the outer one, to a key which Hippa took from his pocket. The four gypsies now entered the shop and closed the door behind them. It was a little world of birds. On every side, whether in large or small cages, one beheld balls of various colored feathers standing on one leg and breathing peacefully. Lovebirds, nestling shoulder to shoulder, with their heads tucked under their wings and all their feathers puffed out, so that they looked like globes of malachite. English bullfinches, with ashen-colored backs in which their black heads were buried, and corselets of a rosy down. Java sparrows, fat and sleek and cleanly. Troupials, so glossy and splendid in plumage that they looked as if they were dressed in the celebrated armor of the Black Prince, which was jet, richly damascened with gold. A cock of the rock, gleaming, a ball of tawny fire like the setting sun. The Campanheiro of Brazil, white as snow, with his delatable toilet tolling tube hanging from his head, placid and silent. These, with a humbler crowd of linnets, canaries, robins, mockingbirds, and phoebes, slumbered calmly in their little cages that were hung so thickly on the wall as not to leave an inch of it visible.
"Splendid little morsels, all of them!" exclaimed Monsieur Craplona. "Ah, we are going to have a rare beating."
"So Pipple does not sleep in his shop," said the English gypsy, Oaksmith.
"No, the fellow lives somewhere up one of the avenues," answered Madame Philomel. "He came the other evening to consult me about his fortune. I did not tell him," she added with a laugh, "that he was going to have so distinguished a sporting party on his premises."
"Come," said the Wondersmith, producing the box of mannequins. "Get ready with souls, Madame Philomel. I am impatient to see my little men letting out lives for the first time."
Just at the moment that the Wondersmith uttered this sentence, the four gypsies were startled by a hoarse voice issuing from the corner of the room, and propounding in the most guttural tones the intemperate query of,
"What do you take? What do you take?"
This sottish invitation had scarce been given when a second extremely thick voice replied from an opposite corner, in accents so rough that they seemed to issue from a throat torn and furrowed by the liquid lava of many barrooms,
"Brandy and water."
"Hello, who's here?"
muttered Herr Hippa, flashing the light of his lantern round the shop. Oaksmith turned up his coat cuffs, as if to be ready for a fight. Madame Philomel glided, or rather rolled, towards the door, while Kerplona put his hand into his pocket, as if to assure himself that his supernumerary optic was all right.
"What do you take?"
croaked the voice in the corner once more.
"Brandy and water,"
rapidly replied the second voice in the other corner. And then, as if by a concerted movement, a series of bibular invitations and acceptances were rolled backwards and forwards with a volubility of utterance that threw patter versus clatter into the shade.
"What the devil can it be?"
muttered the Wondersmith, flashing his lantern here and there.
"Ah, it is those minas."
So saying, he stopped under one of the wicker cages that hung high up on the wall, and raised the lantern above his head, so as to throw the light upon that particular cage. The hospitable individual who had been extending all these hoarse invitations to partake of intoxicating beverages was an inhabitant of the cage. It was a large mina bird, who now stood perched on his crossbar, with his yellowish-orange bill sloped slightly over his shoulder, and his white eye cocked knowingly upon the Wondersmith. The respondent voice in the other corner came from another mina bird, who sat in the dusk in a similar cage, also attentively watching the Wondersmith. These minor birds, I may remark in passing, have a singular aptitude for acquiring phrases.
"What do you take?"
repeated the mina, cocking his other eye upon Herr Hippa.
"Mon Dieu, what a bird!" exclaimed the little Frenchman. "He is in truth polite." "I don't know what I'll take," said Hippa, as if replying to the minor bird. "But I know what you'll get, old fellow. Philomel, open the cage doors and give me the bottle."
Philomel opened, one after another, the doors of the numberless little cages, thereby arousing from slumber their feathered occupants, who opened their beaks and stretched their claws and stared with great surprise at the lantern and the midnight visitors. By the time the Wondersmith had performed the mysterious manipulations with the bottle, and the mannequins were once more in full motion, swarming out of their box, sword and dagger in hand, with their little black eyes gleaming fiercely, and their white teeth shining, the little creatures seemed to scent their prey. The gypsy stood in the center of the shop, watching the proceedings eagerly, while the Lilliputians made in a body towards the wall, and commenced climbing from cage to cage. Then was heard a tremendous fluttering of wings, and faint despairing squeaks echoed on all sides. In almost every cage there was a fierce mannequin thrusting his sword or dagger vigorously into the body of some unhappy bird. It recalled the antique legend of the battles of the pygmies and the cranes. The poor lovebirds lay with their emerald feathers dabbled in their heart's blood, shoulder to shoulder in death as in life. Canaries gasped at the bottom of their cages, while the water in their little glass fountains ran red. The bullfinches wore an unnatural crimson on their breasts. The mockingbird lay on his back, kicking spasmodically in the last agonies, with a tiny sword thrust cleaving his melodious throat in twain, so that from the instrument which used to gush with wondrous music, only scarlet drops of blood now trickled. The mannequins were ruthless. Their faces were 10 times wickeder than ever, as they roamed from cage to cage, slaughtering with a fury that seemed entirely unappeasable. Presently, the feathery rustlings became fewer and fainter, and the little pipings of despair died away, and in every cage lay a poor murdered minstrel, with the song that abode within him forever quenched. In every cage but two, and those two were high up on the wall, and in each glared a pair of wild white eyes and an orange beak, tough as steel, pointed threateningly down. With the needles with which they grasped as swords, all wet and warm with blood, and their bead-like eyes flashing in the light of the lantern, the Lilliputian assassins swarmed up the cages in 2 separate bodies until they reached the wickets of the habitations in which the minas abode. Mina saw them coming, had listened attentively to the many death struggles of his comrades, and had, in fact, smelt a rat. Accordingly, he was ready for the mannequins. There he stood at the barbican of his castle, with formidable beak couched like a lance, The mannequins made a gallant charge.
"What do you take?"
was rattled out by the mina. In a deep bass, as with one plunge of his sharp bill, he scattered the ranks of the enemy and sent three of them flying to the floor, where they lay with broken limbs. But the mannequins were brave automata, and again they closed and charged the gallant mina. Again the wicked white eyes of the bird gleamed, and again the orange bill dealt destruction. Everything seemed to be going on swimmingly for Mina, when he found himself attacked in the rear by two treacherous mannequins who had stolen upon him from behind, through the latticework of the cage. Quick as lightning, the mina turned to repel this assault, but all too late. Two slender, quivering threads of steel crossed in his poor body, and he staggered into a corner of the cage. His wide eyes closed, then opened. A shiver passed over his body, beginning at his shoulder tips and dying off in the extreme tips of the wings. He gasped as if for air, and then, with a convulsive shudder which ruffled all his feathers, croaked out feebly his little speech.
"What'll you take?"
Instantly, from the opposite corner came the old response, still feebler than the question, a mere gurgle, as it were, of
"Brandy and water."
Then all was silent. The minor birds were dead.
"They spill blood like Christians," said the Wondersmith, gazing fondly on the mannequins. "They will be famous assassins."
End of section 4.